This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about the Moscow Mule.
Yes. As always, with these cocktail hour episodes, drink responsibly.
Yes, of course. And even outside of these episodes, drink responsibly.
True. I'm glad you're always here to keep me honest, Lauren.
Anytime.
And it's been a minute since we've done a cocktail hour episode, I think.
It has been. I was inspired to do this one because I went out and had drinks with friends on a patio.
What?
I know. And it was so lovely. And one of them ordered a Moscow Mule. And I was like, it has been a long time since we've done a cocktail hour.
Did it come in the mug?
It did not come in the mug. Came in a regular old glass.
Toss hands up in air. Ridiculous. It's interesting. Because you suggested this one after this lovely experience on a patio. And I had just received a bunch of like old advertisements, as sometimes happens with our job.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, yeah.
About Moscow Mules, like from the 60s.
Oh, yeah. by the way, if y'all hear any purring or jingle jangling in the background, that is our third co-host for the day, Miss Trudy Peru. She is a cat. She is Orange Cat in the household of my two cats, Gray Cat and Orange Cat. And she's just chilling. And, you know, I don't feel like stopping her. So that's just what's happening today.
That's what's happening today.
Mm-hmm.
See, I don't know why, but I keep thinking of the trouble with Trudy. I feel like I don't know why the Star Trek thing is in my head because I made another Star Trek reference right before this.
But that's
all. It's all happening up in my brain.
No. And Trudy is frequently a troublemaker. So
yes,
I think
yes.
This is appropriate.
I got a good glimpse of half of her face in front of the computer camera earlier. And then I heard her laying on top of the recorder.
Yeah.
Despite Lauren's pleas to go away, perhaps with more expletives involved.
There are usually more expletives involved when it comes to these cats,
yes.
Who I love dearly.
Mm-hmm.
But Moscow Mules, yes.
But Moscow Mules. I went through a really brief but intense Moscow Mule phase. I can't honestly say why. I think I had one really good one at a restaurant. And I was like, this was a thing and I haven't been drinking it. And then after that, they were all kind of, not subpar maybe, but subpar compared to that one.
Yeah.
So it was like a bright star that burned out very quickly.
They can be a little bit cloying if they're made with a less biting ginger beer. But we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. There are a bunch of related episodes though, and I'm going to be talking about them pretty much incessantly throughout the course of this episode. But yeah, you can see our lime episode from April of 2019, our ginger episode from November of 2020. Furthermore, our Collins episode from April of 2020 and a hard look at soft drinks from November of 2017.
I had to think about how far away that was for a
when
second.
We were just tiny little podcasting babies.
Oh, so far we've come. And yet the puns are still there.
Nope. Have not tired ourselves out yet.
Not yet, and I doubt ever. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to our question.
Yes.
The Moscow Mule. What is it?
Well, the Moscow Mule is a straightforward cocktail made of vodka, ginger beer, and lime juice, served on ice, and typically with a lime garnish in a copper mug. Okay, so let's break that down a little bit, yeah? So vodka is a clear, mostly neutral-tasting liquor with a watery consistency. It's got a burn on the palate due to the alcohol content and maybe a little bit of sweetness, maybe some tiny bits of flavor in there, but it's pretty nondescript overall. And I looked this up while reading for this episode. Alcohol burns because it apparently lowers like the trigger point of heat receptors in your mouth from somewhere around 107 Fahrenheit, that's 42 Celsius, all the way down to like 93 Fahrenheit or 34 Celsius, which if you're keeping track is below your body temperature. So for a few seconds, while the alcohol is messing with those heat receptors, your mouth is reporting that it's actually on fire.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, right? Heck, yeah. It's those same heat receptors that we talk about when we talk about capsaicin. So, and meanwhile, it feels warm alcohol in your throat and stomach because it's dilating the blood vessels there.
Oh. See, I'm glad you put this in here because I didn't know that, first of all. But secondly, way back when we first started, and Lauren, I think you probably lucked out that I never bought this cocktail to D&D, but I had a flaming cocktail.
Oh.
And I had to learn like different points, different alcohols that you could use to make this flaming cocktail safely. And I just got kind of curious about it.
Yeah.
Went on a very mini rabbit hole and then was like, oh, maybe one day we'll do an episode on this.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely flaming cocktails would be an interesting one. Also, yes, I just, Annie, you're very dear to me. And I, the amount of accident prone that you are makes me feel like probably flaming cocktails is not a category that you should really pursue often or deeply.
I don't know what you mean, Lauren. No, I think I had a brief period. It worked out well for a minute. And then I learned that even glasses that say they are heat resistant and won't explode very well might.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, with my point thus, if not proven, at least proven adjacent, let us continue with our outline.
Fine.
Ginger beer is a generally non-alcoholic carbonated beverage made with water, ginger root, and a sweetener of some kind. It was traditionally brewed using friendly yeasts to create the carbonation, but these days may be manufactured. Ginger has that pungent, spicy, sweet smell and taste. It also feels warm on the palate. And it tastes kind of, yeah, citrusy and like peppery, maybe a little bit resinous or piney. And carbonation in a beverage also brings in a type of artificial heat. Carbon dioxide bubbles trigger specialized nerve cells in the nasal cavity, which are the same ones that register the burn of like horseradish and mustard. It also tastes, carbonated beverages taste a little bit acidic or sour to us. Lime is, of course, a tart and slightly sweet and slightly bitter citrus fruit. The acid really pops on your tongue. So if you mix vodka and ginger beer and lime together in a copper mug or a plain old glass, and then add some cubed and or crushed ice, the result is this cooling and warming, refreshing, fizzy drink that really just kicks your palate with heat and tartness, tempered by sweetness and a hint of bitter. It's a really fun, really simple drink and can be just like dangerously quaffable.
Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that, how much of those kind of heat elements are in that one.
Yeah.
Really exciting for your tongue and your mouth.
It is. Yeah. Some recipes do add some simple syrup, which is just 50-50 sugar and water melted together into a syrup. But, you know, your mileage may vary. And this is in a category of cocktails that was traditionally called a buck, which is just the term for any cocktail made primarily of ginger ale or ginger beer mixed with a liquor and a citrus juice. However, the popularity of the Moscow Mule in particular has made the term mule more common these days than buck. And you can find all kinds of variants on the mule called different cute things, like the Bohemian Mule, which swaps out vodka for absinthe, or the Gin-Gin Mule, which is ginger and gin. Yeah, gin-gin.
Ah, yeah.
So cute. But what about the copper mug?
What about it?
Okay. To be honest, I think the primary reason that this cocktail is served in these shiny, burnished copper mugs is that it's good marketing and they're pretty. You know, like if you're in a bar and a server carries one by, it's attention catching and like you want one. Like, what's that cute thing? I want that cute thing. Bring me one of those. That being said, copper is neat in that it's a lot more heat conducive. Or conductive rather than glass. So it feels really cold to the touch. Like when you touch it, it pulls some of the heat from your fingertips in a way that glass does not. There is a lot of marketing info out there about copper, like enhancing flavors or enhancing carbonation or reflecting light and thus staying cooler longer. But I couldn't really find any solid science to back all of that up.
Right. Yeah. I've definitely heard those things before. The light can't get in, and therefore.
Yeah, I think that for like all practical results at normal room temperature under normal drinking conditions, it's not making that drastic of a difference. But I don't know. I'm not a chemist or a physicist. I'm certainly not both.
Well, we'll never get to the bottom of this copper mug Moscow Mule conundrum, then.
Not at this rate.
Well, what about the nutrition?
Drink responsibly.
Yep.
It depends on the type of ginger beer or ginger ale, or if you add simple syrup. Like it can be relatively light in calories. But yeah, just watch yourself. Drink a water too. Always hydrate.
Always hydrate. We do have some numbers for you.
We do.
The Moscow Mule has had its ups and downs, but it is currently one of the most well-known cocktails in the world. From 2014 to 2015, menu placement of the Moscow Mule in the U.S. rose about 60%. And in 2014, the drink made up 7% of all bar orders. Obviously, that's not... It would be hard to get a read on all bars and all orders, but this is what these surveys said.
Yeah. Yes. I will say that the New Orleans Festival and Trade Conference, Tales of the Cocktail, named 2016 the Year of the Mule.
Year of the Mule. Yeah. I read somewhere 2017 was a really big year for it, too.
Like, yeah.
It was one of the cocktails people were getting.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, in a recent episode of the Hulu show The Great, which is about Catherine the Great of Russia, her lover Leo created the drink in this show. And as Catherine was trying it, she realized she was late to the coup meeting. So she hopped on a mule to get there quickly. And that's where the name comes from. Fun, but yeah, not true at all.
Yeah, well, it's not a historically accurate show. That's not right. That's not what they're
that's
going
not what
for.
They're going
it's
for,
a
yeah.
it's a comedy. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. A lawyer apparently ordered a Moscow Mule during lunch in the TV show Better Call Saul.
Cool.
Cool. Well, I haven't seen that episode, but I feel like that's trying to communicate a lot. But future, a different type of research for
yes.
later dates.
Yes.
We do have some history for you.
We do, but first we've got a quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
yeah.
together.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is yeah. this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No
me
passport
too.
Is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A., I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. So, the way that all of these ingredients for the Moscow Mule got to Los Angeles, which is probably where the Moscow Mule was basically invented. All of these can be, and in some cases already are, different episodes. For example, as we discuss in our Collins and Gin and Tonic episodes, and probably other cocktail hours that I'm forgetting about, lime was a common ingredient in early cocktails, basically thanks to scurvy, because during the era of colonization, sailors and other folks warded off scurvy with citrus, and it got mixed into these curative drinks along with liquors and other medicinal stuff like, for example, quinine. And ginger, which can be and has certainly been used as a digestive aid. Ginger beer developed in European cultures around the 1700s with the British control of the Caribbean, where a lot of ginger was grown. Carbonated beverages were also generally thought to be healthful. Soda fountains originally developed in the 1800s alongside pharmacies as a method of dispensing medications. And this eventually, by the end of the 1800s, led to the creation of all kinds of cocktails, both alcoholic and non, from soda jerks and bartenders and other interested parties, like the Collins, which is a sparkling lemonade spiked with liquor, or the Horse's Neck, which was originally just a non-alcoholic ginger beer or ginger ale and a long strip of lemon peel. Today, it does contain liquor as well. If you ordered a Horse's Neck expecting a non-alcoholic drink, that's probably not what you would receive. But from that Horse's Neck, variations arose, like the Scotch Lassie, which is made from whiskey, lime juice, and ginger beer.
Yes.
Which, right, is basically a Moscow Mule minus the vodka. Vodka, different episode. Definitely. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my heck. Yeah, no. Originated somewhere in Eastern Europe in, say, the 1300s or thereabouts, made its way to the United States via France after World War II. And ice. Another episode tie-in. Yeah, because by the middle of the 20th century, the technology necessary to freeze water cheaply and easily had become pretty widely available in the United States. You can see our ice episode for lots more on that. Mm-hmm. But so, we have all these ingredients and historical predecessors, but how did the Moscow Mule itself come together?
There's a kick in the ass pun here that I'm sure has been made. always got to have those pun wheels turning.
Oh, I would expect nothing less.
Yes. So yes, this is another cocktail hour, another episode full of competing origin stories for a drink that's probably been around basically for longer than any of these claims.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes. But okay. Claim one. The Moscow Mule was invented in, or at least by, 1941 by John G. Martin of J.F. Hublein and Brothers, which was a company that imported food and spirits and reportedly made A1 popular in the United States.
Huh.
Along with John Jack Morgan, no, not that one, owner of the L.A. British pub Cock and Bull. Towards the end of the 1930s, Morgan purchased the rights to Smirnoff vodka for Hublein. It had been on the verge of bankruptcy, Smirnoff had, after the Russian Revolution and moving to America. And so it was moved to America, and Hublein purchased it for $14,000. However, he had a problem. Americans were pretty wary of drinking vodka. It wasn't really something people drank in the U.S. at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Simultaneously, he had ordered way too much of ginger beer, and he was looking to use it up. Or possibly this was Morgan's own brand of ginger beer.
There's a lot of confusion, even within each confusing.
Yes. Yes, I was like, wait a minute. To try to follow up all these loose ends and never was elucidated to me.
Yeah, yeah. The stories are slippery.
They are quite slippery. And further allegedly, Morgan's then-girlfriend, Oseline Schmidt, owned a company that made copper mugs, which is where the copper mugs came in. Or maybe not. Or maybe it wasn't his girlfriend, even if that is true at all. All right, so this seems to largely come from the Moscow Copper website, which is a business. So, grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
But the story goes thusly. A woman named Sophie Berezinski traveled to the U.S. in 1941 with 2,000 copper mugs. Her father owned the Moscow Copper Company, and she had created the design for this mug that we all associate with the Moscow Mule, again, according to the company website. However, they were having trouble selling these mugs in Russia, so Sophie made the journey to the U.S. with the mugs in an attempt to sell them. In the site's version of the story, Sophie's husband threatened to throw them out if she didn't get them out of the house.
Like they were just cluttering up the house, these 2,000 mugs, and he was like, I don't care what you do, just get them out.
Exactly. And she didn't want to see her products go to waste, so she went from door to door in Hollywood trying to find a buyer for them. Eventually, she ended up at the Cock and Bull Bar on Sunset Boulevard. In this version of the tale, Martin was still struggling to sell Smirnoff. Morgan was still struggling to sell his ginger beer. Sophie was struggling to sell her mugs. And the story gets even murkier here. It sort of hops to them all working together to craft a drink that would solve all their problems. It sort of felt like she stumbled in and the two dudes had been like commiserating over a drink, perhaps, of what can we do to solve our problems? And then, I don't know, that was just a vibe I got. So they ideated and experimented, eventually arriving at the Moscow Mule, a mixture of Smirnoff vodka, Morgan's ginger beer, contained in Sophie's copper mugs, with a squeeze of lemon and ice. The name came soon after, either because of Sophie or because the vodka was from Russia, while the ginger beer gave it a kick like a mule. Again, this is all according to this.
Kind of hearsay, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Morgan allegedly called the whole process, however it happened, as, quote, shoving toward inventive genius. Alternate version.
Uh-huh.
The cup was a marketing attempt by Martin to show off the Smirnoff. He would take them to bars to try to sell the vodka and take two pictures of bartenders holding both items, leaving one of the pictures with them to display. And this marketing ploy, if it's true, seemed to have worked, also cementing the copper mug as the popper cup for the drink. The Cock and Bull served beer in copper mugs as well, so makes sense.
Okay, yeah, and this was all when Polaroid cameras, which was the type of camera that he was supposedly using, were pretty new. I think that they were 47 or 49, thereabouts. And so it was like the whole process was flashy, and I didn't intend either of those puns, but here we are.
I'm happy to be here.
Yay! And so So he would take two snaps. He would leave one Polaroid with the bar that he took them at for display, and then take the other one to another bar somewhere else and be like, "Isn't this heckin' great? Don't you want to be like this bartender?" And they would be like, "Oh yeah,
yeah."
Okay. So that is the first story.
Yes. Let us move on to claim two. It was not invented by Jack Morgan, but instead a bartender at Cock and Bull named Wes Price, also in 1941. In Price's words, quote, "I just wanted to clean out the basement." He later claimed, quote, "It caught on like wildfire after he served it to actor Broderick Crawford. He resigned from the bar in 1953, saying he was never appreciated or compensated for his invention."
Ah.
Yes. And that brings us to claim three.
Ah.
Yes. A 1948 article in the New York Herald Tribune posited that this drink was invented in Manhattan by the president of Hublin's vodka division and president of the Pierre Smirnoff Company, Rudolf Kunit. In this version, Kunit, Morgan, and Martin basically did the same thing, where they got tipsy, tried to solve each other's problems, and eventually arrived at the Moscow Mule. Here's a quote from that article. Martin and Cunett had their minds on their vodka and wondered what would happen if a 2-ounce shot joined with Morgan's ginger beer and the squeeze of a lime. Ice was ordered, limes procured, mugs ushered in, and the concoction put together. Cups were raised, the men counted 5, and down went the first taste. It was good. It lifted the spirit to adventure. 4 or 5 later, the mixture was christened the Moscow Mule, and for a number of obvious reasons.
Wow. Mm. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, so, hard to say which is true, but there are some common threads there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The first known recorded mention of the Moscow Mule appeared in 1942 in a syndicated newspaper called Inside Hollywood. Quote, "There is a new drink that is a craze in the movie colony now. It is called Moscow Mule. Recipe, equal parts vodka, lime juice, and ginger beer." With an exclamation point, so they were excited about it. The records indicate it was being served in the classic mug by at least 1945. In 1948, copper mugs were specifically mentioned. And yeah, Woody Allen featured in several ads for Moscow Mules, or Smirnoff Mules, as they were often called in the beginning, in the 1960s, among other people that I think they, I hesitate to say celebrity because I didn't recognize them, but I think, you know, people knew who they were.
at the time, yes. I forgive you. I would forgive any of us if we are not super up to date on our 1960s celebrities.
Thank you.
Also, I do want to put in here, I didn't give like an exact recipe back at the top, but I do not think that you should use equal parts vodka, lime juice, and ginger beer in this drink. That sounds like quite a bit of lime juice.
It does.
Maybe like 2 parts vodka to 3 parts ginger beer and like a solid 0.5 to 1 part lime juice is what you're probably going for. less than one, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, whoo, I just thinking about that is that is like a, that sounds like a smoothie that I do not want.
It would be very tangy, that's for sure.
That would be, it would give you a pucker. Probably bartenders knew what was up and were using better proportions because the popularity of the Moscow Mule was such that it like really bumped vodka sales in the United States and probably is what primed the market for the vodka martini craze that really took off in the 1970s.
Oh. And yeah, the Moscow Mule may have been partially inspired by a similar drink called the Mamie Taylor, named after the renowned opera singer. It was popular during 1900 to 1940 and was essentially the same, only the liquor involved was scotch instead of vodka. For a time, it was about as well known as the singer, and then it just really, from what I was reading, people were like, no one makes this anymore.
Yeah, so. I think the popularity of the Moscow Mule really tanked it. So the Mamie Taylor, which, by the way, is spelled differently than the Broadway singer spelled her name, but they didn't have Google back then, I guess. So anyway, the Mamie Taylor was originally called the Scotch Lassie, as discussed above, and originated in the South back in the 1800s. So
there you go.
There you go. There you go.
During the height of McCarthyism and the Cold War, there was a conspiracy theory that Smirnoff was involved in some anti-American movement, and some bars boycotted Smirnoff and therefore the Moscow and Smirnoff Mule because of it.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. In 1982, Hoobline sold itself and Smirnoff to the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company for $1.4 billion, which is a lot bigger amount than the $14,000
yes.
Smirnoff's fortune.
There are a number of zeros that are different between those two numbers. The popularity of mules around 2016 or so was such that the Iowa Alcoholic Beverages Division of their health department released this notice that pure copper mugs should not be used to serve acidic drinks as copper could leach into the drink and lead to copper poisoning. But chemists came out with relieving notices that to leach like a dangerous amount of copper into a drink, pure lime juice would have to be sitting in a pure copper mug for a matter of hours. So you're probably fine. You're probably fine with your cocktail. Other sources, many of whom sell copper products, simultaneously came out with articles about how copper infusions are good for you.
Oh.
These are also basically false. using copper mugs probably has neither any harm nor any benefit.
What an emotional roller coaster just took us on, Lauren.
Sorry, that's how I felt going through the reading. I was like, oh. Oh, okay.
Oh.
Nothing to panic about.
Yeah, it's fine. It should have been like a flat roller coaster.
Yeah.
Flat track.
Yeah.
But instead, there are all these ups and downs.
Whatever drives clicks, man. A lot of copper mugs are lined with different, less leachy metals anyway. So it's you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That does sound like a, speaking of 60s movies, that sounds kind of to me like a noir film where the murder, it turns out, like, he left lime juice in the copper mug. 15 days. It's a big twist at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess, yeah, just, I mean, don't do that. Just don't do that, probably.
No. No good.
No good.
That is pretty impressive that they had to release a public health statement about it because this drink was so popular.
Wow. They were like, we see what you're doing, and it's bad.
A lot of ups and downs in this one. Twists and turns.
Mm-hmm. This has been a true roller coaster of an episode.
It really has. But alas, it's time to get off of this roller coaster for now.
For now. But we do have some listener mail for you.
We do. But first, we have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel. Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone. Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico. We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener Mail. Roller coaster.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I think we were on two different roller coasters, but I think that we were like waving at each other from them.
That's like your old Dueling Dragons ride.
Yeah.
That's what we were doing. Jeremiah wrote, I continue to really enjoy listening to your show. Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. I just had a couple of thoughts about some recent episodes. First, Old Bay. It is a next level popcorn seasoning. Oh, yes. Second, Annie's puns are a damn delight. Mm-hmm. Third, Lauren's vexation over stupid marketing terms like bone broth are something I resonate with deeply. I see you. Last, my son asked me the other day why there aren't more haikus about donuts. My response was to start writing them. Ahem. Bring me my coffee. How about a donut too, while you are at it? Breakfast deity. One is never adequate. I'll have three donuts. Beautiful. Bravo.
Yes, yes, yes. Snaps.
Also, yes, your son is right. Why aren't there more donut haikus? I'm glad you are the hero we need right now.
Yes. Always donut haiku.
Mm-hmm.
Jared wrote, I spent almost my entire life up to age 27 within the collective borders of Idaho and Utah. Considering the predominant religious culture in those two states forbids alcohol consumption and looks side-eyed at caffeinated beverages, root beer is a very popular choice of pop. Outside of this region, up until relatively recently, it was a regular occurrence to go to a fast food place and ask if they have root beer to hear the most frustrating sentence a root beer connoisseur can hear. We have Dr. Pepper. Or something along those lines. Dr. Pepper is not root beer. It's carbonated prune juice, according to my dad. Also, we learned how to brew root beer much in the same way one might brew Sun tea. We used Heyer's root beer concentrate, a glass cider jug, technically anything with a screw-on lid that wouldn't split from the pressure works, water, and sugar. We mixed it all up and set the jug outside to sit in the sun for a few hours. It was well known in our extended family on my dad's side that his mother made her root beer quite a bit stronger than anyone else in the family. Once, an older brother made jokes along the lines of one was enough, then you'd run around for a bit, then get kind of sleepy. You'd take a nap and wake up with a little headache. But one more glass of grandma's root beer, you'd feel a little better. Having been given a beginner's home root beer brewing kit, I was motivated to give it a try. Someday, I fantasize about being able to develop my own unique formula. Also, until you pointed it out in the episode, I'd never noticed the mint flavor in root beer. But as soon as you said it, I recalled my sense memory of all the root beer I've drunk over the years and was able to retroactively notice and appreciate the mintiness.
I love this. I love hearing from people making their own root beer.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, and you know, me too, about the mint thing. Like, I had never really put it together, but then as soon as I read it, I was like, oh, yeah, that's absolutely a note in there. Weird. I don't know. Like, I guess it all just blended together in my head. It was just like roots. It's made of root stuff. Yes. Mint's not a root.
Yes. I also made this unfortunate mistake that you pointed out where I asked Lauren if Dr. Pepper was root beer. So
oh.
I've come a long way. I've come a long way.
You have. You have. We're going to get you some. We're going to get you some soon.
Yes. Yes. In the meantime, thanks to both of those listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.